Welcome to the Awakening Conversations podcast, where we dive into the many aspects, challenges, and life-changing lessons that are part of our spiritual awakenings. Through conversations, we are looking to bring you wisdom and perspectives so that you feel more supported and connected as you navigate your own awakening path. We are your hosts, Kate McGee and Amanda Richardson-Meyer. We've both been through our own unique awakening journeys that have changed and transformed our lives. And through these awakening conversations, we will be growing and expanding alongside you. We're so glad to have you join us. Let's dive in. Welcome back to the Awakening Conversations podcast. My name is Kate and I'm here with my co-host Amanda. We have been talking a lot about power structures and narcissism in our recent episodes, and something else that's come up through them is this idea of the guru. This is something that also brings us into conversations about cults and how cults operate. We're also starting to see a lot of these cults and gurus in our current society being exposed, just as many things are being exposed right now. And we've been exploring particularly two of those. One is a series called Bewitched, spiritual leader who had some questionable tactics and cult-like behavior, as well as the Nexium cult that has just had a documentary brought out, and the work of Mark Vicente, who was a member of that cult, really speaking out about these kind of behaviors. So we want to explore this topic today because there's a bigger conversation here about whether we believe we could be seduced into a cult or not, and perhaps how we may have already been in one without even realizing it. Because the bigger picture here is that the current societal institutions use a certain tactics for us to follow the rules, be compliant, and meet their agendas. So today we're going to unpack the idea of the cult, where we may have been in one already, and why this is an important thing to start to consider right now. So Amanda, can't wait to unpack this topic with you today.
Yeah, it's one that I feel like I've been listening to more and more about it, and I've been a little bit curious why I'm so intrigued by it. But I think that as we start to unpack it today, people will start to understand why this is important to listen to, because it's important to know the tactics that are used in cults. We oftentimes believe that intelligent people cannot be seduced or convinced to join a cult. However, Mark Vicente and the two women that all the women that we heard stories about with the Bewitched series, they're all very intelligent human beings. But despite being human beings, we all have susceptibilities. And people or institutions that use the tactics of cults, they are able to sense what those vulnerabilities are and to manipulate and coerce and do things to allow us to go against what our mental faculties might convince us of. And a lot of times the stories that we've listened to of people, their intuition sensed something was, but there was something deeper, an unconscious wound that was allowed them to quote unquote fall prey to the tactics of these cult leaders. And so maybe we can start by let's talk about Bewitched. I want to go start there first. Yeah. And then we can talk about what we know about Nexium. And so the interesting story about Bewitched, to me, that's really interesting, is someone that you and I both have known about. The person that this podcast, it's a podcast, it's two women, Elise Bassine and another woman named Robin. I don't know her last name.
Robin McKay.
Yeah. And the podcast is called
Raising Consciousness.
Raising Consciousness. And the series is Bewitched. And this woman that they refer to as Betty, they have not outed her, which I think they should out her personally, but I respect their choice to do it how they did it. They share their own personal experiences working with this woman, and they do an excellent job of outlining the psychological tactics and principles that were used on them that this person was able to get them to do things that they wouldn't typically do, spend mm-hmm. money that they sense they shouldn't be spending. And that's the two of them leading this podcast, but they have a whole host of other women, successful women, intelligent women that also have similar stories, but many different flavors. It seemed like just Betty was really keen and aware of the specifics of each woman and what their weak point was and mm-hmm. how to hook them into her world, essentially, and be able to kind of just like manipulate them like a puppet master.
Yeah. And you know what I think is really interesting for both these particular cults? They've started out as personal development or business development, because this particular one where they talk about Betty, a lot of the women started either training with her because she taught a certification, interestingly, in the Akashic Records. And then she did a lot of business training then for, I think, the people who did her courses to help them integrate that into their own businesses. And she pitched it that she could teach you how to have those 6, 7, and she goes on to say 8 and 9 figure months, which when I first saw that myself.
Red flag. Like,
you know what I mean? And interestingly, when you listen to the women talk about it, behind the back end of that, no one ever achieved it. And it was just a big flashy tactic. So yeah, it was really, really, really powerful to hear these, as you said, intelligent women. Many of them, especially the two that hosted the podcast, come from their own backgrounds as counselors, psychologists, educated, like with degrees.
Trauma healing.
Yep, trauma healing. And then found themselves in this situation when they're being fully manipulated. Now, the important thing to start with there, I think, too, is that because they entered the relationship in the sense that I want to learn from this person, I feel this person knows more than I do, and that's definitely how she pitched herself, they then take themselves out of their sort of role as a clinician or a therapist, where they might have more of those, that awareness turned on to be sensing things, because that's what you do in that role. And they've put themselves into the receiving. So there's this instant kind of like letting go, opening up and placing the power into somebody else's hands, because that's what you do when you enter a coaching relationship, right? You do that because you think this person that I'm going to sign up with has something that I need to learn. And so therefore I'm going to sit back and listen. And so I'm going to take in all of the things. And as they say, they many, many things, even in their early experiences of working with her, they felt like red flags, but they questioned that because I'm in the place of being the one who doesn't know as much as the one serving me. So therefore I'll just put that to the side, but then actually internalize it and make me see, should I be chewing on this and thinking about that in and of myself? And this was sort of, I think, how some of the first kind of like hooking in, I'm going to say, or like help starting to make the client in this particular situation question themselves and feel like they needed her, because she's pointing out little things, knowing some of their trauma, poking into that in a quite awful ways in some cases. But because they're in this receptive place of, I'm here to learn and grow, I'm going to take that on board, start to unpack this, but being deep in my trauma. And as many of them said, she never actually helped them out of that. She just put them in the trauma, but then creates this kind of bond with them where she's the one's going to help them out of it. And so they kind of become enmeshed in certain ways within the relationship. I don't know the full details of the other one, but I know that that did start out as, again, a personal development program that then I think, I don't know if it was always focused on women, but then at some point became women in personal development that then spiraled off into this sort of group where it was an inner circle for women who wanted to grow. And I don't know that it was a business focus, but more personal development. And then that's once they were sort of in this inner circle. The one interview that I watched on that, one of the women who had left said, in order to be able to enter into this inner circle, you had to first give sort of compromising information about yourself, because it was used as, if you don't hold yourself to the standards of your own growth, we can, you know, leverage this against you. And even as she says, when she talks about it, it's like, I didn't think that was a red flag. She said, I know when I'm saying it right now, that sounds absolutely insane. But because there's been this period of time, and I think for her, it was 5 or 6 years leading up to, she wanted in. So it's like, okay, I'm also being told that for me to achieve my highest goals, my highest growth, this is good for me. This is for me to give up this information. It'll just be used to help me and my personal growth. So she hands over this information. As soon as she's inside, she realizes I can't get out because now they have this dirt on me. And so then begins like some, you know, I haven't gotten into too many of the details there either, but some pretty terrible things, more so than even the Bewitched. But then this sort of sense of I can't leave, and, you know, continued manipulation from there.
Yeah, I will say that I haven't watched The Vow, which is a series. I think it's a series or a documentary. I can't get it here in Mexico, unfortunately. And I think that would fill in more of the gaps of the story for us. So we've just been listening to Mark Vicente, who is the whistleblower on NXIVM. He has a podcast, and so he covers a bunch of different topics related to cults. Something that Betty in the Bewitched series did was, or something that drew in women, was that she would attract these high-level women who were doing, who are both spiritually and intuitively gifted. They have gifts and they are doing different things in business. And so that was part of the draw. And that was also part of what kept some of the women there, was the other women in there. Mm-hmm. And then also tactics were used when they started, when maybe a red flag might go off. She would use tactics to call out, and they referred to it as a snake bite, whereas if you spoke out against her, she would publicly shame and make an example out of them. And so they questioned less. They didn't speak out of turn. And so they thought that they were the only ones seeing things that way. And mm-hmm. so it's like creating this isolation within the followers to not speak out. It's like a self-censorship that is, I'm the only one that must be thinking this way, or I saw what happened to her, I'm not also going to do that. And so it keeps things in line for a time being, and eventually the cracks start to show. But there are all these mechanisms in play that even these intelligent people, they override the things that they're seeing, or they're not seeing them, because there are these tactics at play that these cult leaders use to get them to stay in, stay committed, not question. And then, and there's this fear, like so many times in the podcast, they spoke about, oh, I'm not going to go to that retreat or whatever. And then she would call people out of like, oh, and so there was this almost like, a FOMO aspect mm-hmm. to it. Like, mm-hmm. oh, I don't want to be the only one that doesn't. And so it's like, they're deep down, they're sensing, I don't feel called to go. I think I'm done with this. I don't want to spend the money on this. But then when it came down to it, they would keep going because they thought that they're the only ones that are feeling this way. And so mm-hmm. it kept going for a time being because they thought no one else was feeling this way. And like, and in hindsight, they're all having these conversations and they're like, how did you see, like they're comparing notes in terms of what their experiences were. And it's like, mm-hmm. they had very similar experiences as far as what they saw, but at the time that wasn't known. And mm-hmm. so they just kept doubting and continuing on, and more people were coming in. They were used to then sell it to new people to come in. Mm-hmm. And anytime someone would leave, they would be called, they would be talked poorly about. And that's another thing that kept them in, is like, oh, I know what happens if you're the one that gets torn apart to the group, and I don't want to be in that position. So
yeah. And I think another technique she did use too is in those group settings, if somebody doesn't necessarily, they spoke out of turn, but she could be very vicious publicly to one of the members in the group, which sort of made them again question whether to speak up and say things, because they didn't want to be the recipient of this public shaming, sort of like, you know, berating and putting down within that circle. So a lot of kind of control over how they acted, what they said, what they did. Some of the other things that they all spoke about too was that within the containers and the relationships that they had with her, over time there was this implant of information that the people in their lives were not supportive of them, that they were bad for them. She blankly told one woman that her fiance was not the person she was supposed to marry, and really planted a very powerful seed for her to question that, which is destructive behavior. There's also, just to add another person that we've looked at in our research for occult behavior, and I can't ever remember how to say his name, but Benito somebody. How do we say his name?
Masaru.
Yeah, Benito Masaru, something like that. He smokes. Uh-huh. In the research that we did for this podcast, there's a great article written by a woman who does a lot of stuff on cults, and she's excerpted a lot of his online content. And the one that stood out to me was this lecture he was giving to a large group of people about fuck your relationships, fuck the people, fuck your family, fuck this, fuck that. You know, you don't need them. And this implanting of like moving out those people closest to you, making them the enemy, and that the only people you can trust and need are the people in your inner circle. So this real breaking down of relationships, which we've been talking about a little bit in our last episodes as well, of these kind of behaviors, of some of this, you know, darker energy that's here, is trying to separate us from those that we truly do trust and love and are bonded to, because then, you know, we're become attached to this other person as the one who's going to help and save us, and that only one that gets us, things like that. They can manipulate us more in that sense to do things for them that we wouldn't normally do, because we feel that they're the only person who understands us if we truly buy into those kind of things. And I just had a little list of a couple of other things. Let me see if there's anything else here that might relate to what we could potentially experience if, even though we don't know it, we've been in a cult.
Information control, behavioral control. So something that I think I feel like I heard more of this from Mark Vicente about Nexium, and maybe this was spoken to in Bewitched, is that they were taught this way of seeing, of understanding people.
Mm-hmm.
And so what would happen is that if someone talked poorly about them, they were, he didn't use the word subversive, but that's the term used, I think, by like Scientology and stuff, where if you are someone who speaks out against what the group thinks or does or believes, they're a subversive person and they're not to be trusted. And so that's a way to prevent people from the outside from impacting the people within. It's like they're learn what a subversive person is. And so you know what to look for. They're like, oh, this is what they'll say. This is what, these are the terms they'll use. So when you hear those terms, you can just dismiss it, because they're a subversive person. They are not, they don't have your best interests at heart. And so, you know, people wonder, it's like, how, you know, why didn't you just listen to your family? Or why, you know, because the mind is changed to believe that it's almost projecting on the outside what they are actually doing, in terms of they are, those people are brainwashed. So you don't need to listen to them. Like they don't understand what you know. Yeah. And so it's like creating this division, this us versus them, this separation to, as a insulation against the outside world, waking people up to what they're in.
Yeah. Yeah. And then another couple of things I'll add to that too is like that sort of feeling of the people outside are less of, so they won't understand it. So therefore that's why this inner circle, or, you know, is so important, because we're the only ones who get it. And then another thing I think was important too was, and I also watched one more that was on a cult, and it was called, it's the, and what was her name? God, I've got the worst memory. It was the One Taste, the, what was her name?
One Taste? Nicole, yeah. Adoni Nicole, or something like that?
Yeah. So there's also a documentary on that. There's been some say that some of that was true and some of that wasn't. But one of the things was a video of her speaking in this documentary called Orgasm Inc., I think it was, where somebody kind of challenged her around how some of these practices were done within the ethos, the training that went along with this One Taste. And it was, you know, for many people who, if you would watch it, you were like, okay, that sounds really, really healthy and sets up a very clear boundary, because what they were doing was actually very sexual in nature. And this one guy challenged her by saying, you know, just there was like kind of the setup of the container, how to do it really ethically and energetically, you know, so that it was clear. And she challenged that by telling him that, if I accept that you're holding women as victims and that's not the energy you want to carry. And so the other tactic is that when challenged by those inside, they deflect it back onto you, that you're the one in the wrong, to make you question yourself because you might hold them as this higher power or someone who knows better, digging into you to create confusion, lack of trust in what you know, and kind of start to make you feel like, even as I say it, like wobbly and like just really unsure of like not knowing how to trust your inner instincts. So there's some of those tactics that are at play in cults. Anything else you want to add that you observed that we can then continue on to sort of look at through this other angle that we've got?
Yeah, I'll elaborate on what you just said. So Mark Vicente spoke to that, and he shared about how as a protective mechanism against people of his members questioning the experiences they were receiving, he used the concept of the victim as, oh, you're being a victim. And so any questioning is, oh, you're playing the victim. That's not in alignment with the work that we're doing. You need to do more work, essentially, because you're living in the victim state. And so any questioning the behavior that was done, it's like, oh, you have more work to do. It's that turning it back on the other person and seeing where in that, I don't know, I'd say we kind of saw that with Balana and Dr. Gaffney, as far as you have problems with, I mean, we simplified it, but you have problems with this. It means that's your edge to like through. And to go beyond versus, no, this is actually something that
a boundary
is something, something that is a problem. And so that contributes to that overriding and that eroding of one's trust and confidence within themselves to sense what they're believing to be true. That's like also gaslighting, right? It's like, I'm experiencing this. And oh, no, you're not experiencing that. This is what that means. Like, that's not what that means. And so that just weakens people over time, right? Yeah. And then the more the tactics, the more, you know, they use, I've heard the terminology like of the hook, the more you get hooked in and the harder it is to understand what's truth and what's not truth.
Yeah.
Because they've basically siphoned, the cult leaders siphon the energy of the people within.
Yeah.
And they no longer, it's very hard for them to distinguish what's true anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. It's sort of that weakening of their resolve, weakening of their sense of self. And, you know, even watching this Orgasm Inc., she did some like ego sort of provoking and attacking. She had another situation where she had someone who wanted to leave. So she asked a member of the group to go and sort it out and make this person not leave. The suggestion by these members of the group was, oh, you should talk to the leader, Nicole. So they brought her to her to say that she didn't trust her anymore. And she put on this like tears and like, oh my God, you can't leave me. And so the woman was like, oh no, I don't want to leave. The woman leaves the room and then she dries up the tears and then turns to this woman and say, well, that didn't work the way you thought it did it. Like kind of then attacking this woman for not being able to control the situation. And, you know, like, so there's this constant kind of battle for your sense of goodness, your sense of growth, how evolved you are, and keeping you in this thought that there's more work you need to do. You don't know. You can't trust yourself. You need to be in that space or continue to invest in these people for this thing that's going to save you, ultimately give you the things that you want in your life.
Yeah. Before we move on, I think it'd be helpful if we explore the key features of a cult. Mm-hmm. And so there is this model, it's called the BITE model, by someone named Stephen Hassan. And that stands for behavior, information, and emotional control. And so here are some aspects underneath that. So authoritarian leadership. So oftentimes there's a central charismatic figure. So a guru, a prophet, a founder, and they often claim special knowledge or access to truth. And the leader is not to be questioned. Next, isolation. So we spoke to that. So from family, friends, outside influences, and creating this us versus them mentality. And so the dichotomy between the chosen, you're a chosen, versus the asleep masses. Control of behavior. So strict rules governing appearance, lifestyle, diet, sex, and other aspects. Control of information. So discouraging external sources or critical thinking. Labeling dissent as spiritual immaturity or ego. Spoke to that. Thought reform and indoctrination. So using slogans and teachings repetitively. And then black and white thinking, such as if you leave, you lose your soul, or other forms of that. Mm-hmm. And then finally, emotional control. So guilt, fear, shame can be used to keep members compliant. Mm-hmm. And then love bombing, which we've heard a lot in the Bewitching series. Followed by withdrawal if obedience falters. So that was a tactic used by Betty quite a bit, where it's like, you know, she was love bombing at the beginning. And then as soon as they crossed the line, she put them back in line really quickly. Mm. And another thing that I wanted to mention that Betty did that I thought was interesting was that at her retreats, she would basically restrict food and water from, and so they were in these really altered states where they could not, they didn't have good grasp of reality. And so they were much easier to manipulate by control, you know, and that creates this power dynamic of who controls the food, who's the authority. And so I thought that was a really interesting aspect of it that I didn't ever consider. And definitely one that I'm going to be paying attention to if I, like, are you trying to control my food? I'd never thought about that, but that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And it was also the sleep. It was food, water, and sleep. True, so a big part of that, was like keeping them up late to do certain things and then, you know, not enough time in the morning for breakfast or we've got to go. And, you know, if you listen to the series, there was other reasons why all of a sudden meals just couldn't be had. It's an interesting series. So tap into it to really kind of unpack some more of that. Well, let's talk about now, why is this important for us to be talking about? Why is it something that, you know, any of us should consider? How is this important for our lives and our awakening journeys and this time that we're moving through?
Well, let's zoom out. And if we've gone through an awakening journey, we've awakened to certain aspects of our, we'll say, unconscious or asleep aspect of our lives. And a lot of these mechanisms that we just spoke about are actually used within society to control humans, control the masses, to keep people in line, right? And hold on 1 second.
Before you dive into those.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll just add there too that, you know, I think I said this last week, but I do just think that when we do have these awakenings, like we start to question, there's a vulnerability because we want to know more, right? So we're seeking in somewhat of a boundaryless way because some of those, let's call them boundaries, may have changed because we've now had this shift in our perspective mentally where we're like, well, actually that boundary or those sense of containment on this, you know, part of my life that I thought I had is fractured now. It's a bit wobbly. You start to see other ways that you compartmentalize your life or certain things or ways you think. So those boundaries become a bit blurred and we don't really have a strong sense of what is true, what is right. So I think overall we're like a little boundaryless, or the barriers to our mental capacities, our consciousness are more porous and open because we're in such a confusion in some ways of like, what's going on here? That is why it's important for us to talk about this, because there's such a vulnerability and there's a genuine seeking to know and to grow and to learn and to improve that, as we said, I think last week, it can be taken advantage of. And yes. Then when we go into what we're going to talk about now, it's like how in some ways pre us even having an awakening, pre us ever thinking we could be involved in a cult or not, certain ways society is structured in some ways have conditioned us to be partial to influences of a cult. And that's what we're going to dive into now.
Yeah. So let's see where I want to go first with this. Well, so I think what I've learned in my awakening journey is I've had all these experiences that showed me where I was looking outside of myself for answers in my life pre-awakening. And it comes through our schooling, our 9-to-5 jobs, routines and conformity, and our media, our science, as far as, you know, who's the authority? Who do we look to for answers? Emotional control, like using guilt and fear to drive people to comply. If you don't do X, people will die, for example. Collective trauma cycles that keep us in fight or flight. War, all these things, consumerism, all these things keep us looking outside of ourselves versus within. And if we spend our whole life not believing that the answers are within, we're vulnerable. Right. Mm-hmm. And so if we go through an awakening in whatever form that might take, right, we've talked about on this channel many different ways that we can go through awakenings, and we decide, oh, I'm a spiritual person now, I want to follow the spiritual leader. If we haven't started to deconstruct all the ways that we unconsciously believe that the answers are outside of us, there are wolves in sheep's clothing or in a robe that are going to prey on your desire to have the answers fed to you. And I would say that, interestingly, many of the individuals on the Bewitched series said that they, I don't want to quote them incorrectly, but paraphrasing, that they wouldn't change what happened because they learned so much about themselves through the process. And so in a way, I would say that if we think about ourselves as souls and we came here to learn, like we came here to awaken and to reclaim that power, that being involved with one of these, and hopefully, you know, these women got out unscathed, relatively speaking. Mm-hmm. There's healing, of course, to be done if you do get yourself involved with one of these. But it's healing that has to be done anyway. So begin looking at, where do I give my power away? Where do I look outside of myself for answers? And, you know, I think for some of us, we've been more fortunate in that, like, my main spiritual teacher, she was very aware of the need to empower versus make a dependency. And she was committed to her own work versus believing that she had all the answers. And so I feel very fortunate in that I did not find myself following someone that, because it was a process from awakening to, like, it wasn't all of a sudden where I'm like, oh, I'm not looking outside of myself for answers anymore. It was like a process of learning, of seeing, oh, that's one way I'm giving away my power. Oh, yeah. That's another way I'm giving away my power. And so it was like this somewhat gradual process where I had to deprogram and unlearn all the ways that I had through my life looked at different, and I thought I was an out of the box thinker, and I was sort of a rebel. But even even then, I was still, there were all these ways that I was looking outside of myself for the answers, and I had to start learning to cultivate the ability to trust and go within and feel and discern what is true to me. It's not to say that you can't take in information from the outside, but there's, it's not of putting up another human being on a pedestal and believing that they have the answers. And so if you're a person that's not doing that, you're likely not to succumb, like not to, likely to get involved with a cult if you are sourcing from within.
Yeah. I think, you know, one of the big challenges too is, even when I reflect on my own journey, like I didn't know how to look within. Pre even my own awakening, right? I met some Americans and I can remember thinking, these people are so self-aware. The way they talk about themselves, their lives, and how they can articulate like themselves and what I've been through and how that makes me feel. And I can remember just being fascinated by that to the point where I literally got out a document on my computer. I was like, right, what do I know about my own life? Like, what have I been through? And like started to try to reflect, because I never thought to reflect inwardly. Maybe I did, but not in this outwardly easy to express way those American women that I met could do. And so I think too, as I've seen through my own awakening, like we don't always want to look in, because to get underneath to the knowing, the first thing that we hit is all the junk, the junk stuff, right? We have to do the work to clear the path to even feel and trust the knowing, right? And that can be buried under the layers of shame and emotion and, you know, the ego and the just the constructs of who we think we are. So that's also not the easy path, right? Like, what is my intuition? How do I trust it? And if you've got a strong mind, like it's always going to pull you away from that. So that's hard in and of itself. And, you know, I think the other thing too is like when I heard you read that list, I wrote down authority. Don't question the leader. Government, right? Don't question that. Separation. We're the chosen ones. Religion, control behavior, like religion and government and school and probably the healthcare system, take these drugs and you'll be better. Information control and that slogan on repeat, social media, you know, and then that emotional control, my God, advertising, our marketing, news.
You're not going along with our slogan, we're going to sick the dogs on you, right?
You know, like you get attacked. Yes. So ultimately what we're trying to say here, or part of what we want to say here, is that unfortunately these cult behaviors, what creates, you know, a very closed unit cult, actually modern day behaviors that are in all of the institutions and in the way even our world is set up. I mean, advertising is a great example how it's evolved to understand what our pain is. And then sell us something we don't necessarily want or need, but we think we do. And we believe it's our idea, right? I think I need this. I'm the one that decided I need X, Y, and Z, right? We were influenced to do that. And again, we're looking outside of someone else to give us something that's going to make us feel better. And it's this constant, you know, look out, find, bring in, look out, find, bring in to feel more successful, spiritual, beautiful, etc. And yeah, the spiritual path, the true spiritual path, is the complete opposite of that. It is from here down and in. And then when we hit that in and that place, then it's like, oh, I feel beautiful, smart, peaceful, strong every single day, even if absolutely nothing on the outside of my world changes. And that is the exact thing they don't want you to feel, because then you don't buy anything. You're not going to consume things. You're not going to be under the control of other people.
You're
going
to question.
Yeah. You know, and like that was a really big eye-opener for us as we started to unpack this sort of cult thing. And, you know, I think we circled around how interesting is cults, and then realized, wait a second, through some of the things that we discovered, we're in one called society. And, you know, then, you know, these women that are smart and educated that find themselves in it in a sort of more concentrated way, we're almost primed for it. We're primed to be influenced because we do want this person outside of us to show us a better way, right? So they gave their power to this woman to lead them into this greater wealth and bigger business that then went sour. And same with Nexium. They was the spirit, it was their personal development and, like, you know, creates community and it, you know, there's people who get me and it plays on the vulnerability. It plays on the pain points. And then as I watch this other one, this Orgasm Inc., it was the same thing, playing on these people's inner desires and pain points. And, you know, this is the world we live in. We live in a cult like place. So what is the antidote to this? And then what do we do with all of this information? Like, what's next for us?
Well, I will say that I think energetically the cover that these gurus and cult leaders, even the ones in the institutions, their tactics are starting to be exposed, I think, energetically. And so we're seeing more of these control leaders come to light. And so that's good. And so we can start to look at the anatomy of what's going on. Where can we see these mechanisms being playing out? Where can you can see it in the reaction to whatever the drama of the day is? We can see thought control happening. We can see emotional control, information control. We can, you know, if you question a narrative, what happens when a narrative is questioned? What is the response? And do you self-censor? Do you not speak up? Kind of like those women did not speak up when they sensed something was wrong. Are you staying quiet? So something that came to mind was in 2020 and I was reading 1984. And what came to mind was how social media is not representative of what people are thinking. But we believe it is because the middle is quiet. They've learned to, there's no that black and white thinking that we spoke to is what is permitted. And anything that's nuanced, they're going to funnel you into one side or the other. So if you speak about a situation, oh, well, you're that then. I'm going to other you to the other side. And so people see that happen, how that happens. And they learn to not to speak up, even if they're more of a middle of the road. So most people, in my opinion, are seeing things like you. They're more nuanced. But most people are not speaking because we've been manipulated to stay quiet because we've seen what happens if you speak out. You get shamed. You get called terrible names. You lose friends and family members if you do. And so what we're seeing on social media is not a representative of what people really believe. And so what is the answer? I would say you don't want to speak out on social media because start having conversation with people that you trust in real life. And I think that, you know, another mechanism that I saw in 2020 was if we're all online and we think the online world is the real world, you know, we're isolated essentially. And so we need to not isolate ourselves. We need to find aligned people in real life. Can be online too. But I think I found personally that when I'm having a conversation in person, I can get a read on somebody of like what, you know, if I can have this conversation with this person or not, can I have a more nuanced conversation? And the more I think we have these conversations, we see that I'm not alone in the way I see things. And I think that grows and that snowballs because isolation is a mechanism.
Yeah,
that keeps the cult leader in power. Mm-hmm. We can replace cult leader with institution leaders.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so that's what I'd say. So like, how do we counterbalance all those things that are happening? So the isolation is like, we start talking about it where we can.
Yeah.
We have to get our information from different sources. We can't just, we can't just take what we have to look like. What is our, are we allegiant to like one side? And do we not, do we other people, like, are we doing that? Then we're part of the cult, the continuation of the cults, if we are participating in othering of people who, like, I've seen it just this week where someone posted that they aren't happy with the politics of the state they're living in, of how it's changed their state and they're moving, and they've just been attacked because they've said they don't like the politics of their state because, oh, they're not a political, you know, influencer. And so they're not allowed to have an opinion on what's going on politically. And so it's like this immediate response to, that's code word for you're on the other side. And they're like, hey, wait a minute. No, I'm in the middle. I've been on your side, but I'm no longer on a side, and I see problems with both sides. But just where this dog trainer that I follow, he complained about something that he lives in California. He complained about something. Oh, you're a MAGA person now. I'm unfollowing you. It's like, because he was complaining about not, you know, something really silly, but that signal to someone else, oh, you're that. It's just, it's insanity.
Yeah. And I think it will be worth linking to Mark Vicente's conversation, where it's it's the self-sealing system or something.
But yeah, we'll link to it.
Part of that conversation, he talks about, like, especially this use of words, right? And like this setting up for us to create the other. This othering is such a massive part of it, right? The spiritual path is remembering. You put all the words, the labels, the physical differences aside. We are exactly the same. We are physical flesh and blood with a soul here for a learning experience, right? The rest is noise. The rest is a mental construct that helps us make sense of the world, you know, who I am, what other is, right? That's really all we need that for, because it's through the sense of the self that we're having the lessons, we're learning, we're moving down the path. But then the ego gets into it, the sense that one is evil and bad. I mean, the duality, the polarity, whatever it is. But he speaks in this particular episode about how there's certain words now that even the word like freedom can set people off on, like, this fracturing of like, oh, if you said that word, you're one of them.
Code word.
Yeah, right. Or sovereignty or natural immunity was the one that I was just like, oh, boom, right? He gives this whole host of words. And you, without even being someone who would say, well, let me just think that for a second. When I say natural immunity, right? Like, okay, maybe I go a little bit like me and them because that's how the world's structured, right? I don't hold that and then speak about it and make a deal out of it. But even in me inherently, as I say that right now, like I feel that sense of two, me and another, right? So even within someone who I would consider myself aware and not someone who's gives a shit about whether what one of those you are, it's in me to feel them. Do you know what I mean? So it's in us. And then again, coming back to, right, when we've noticed ourselves othering, because it's such a big one, this is the big, big crux of what we're going through in this awakening, is this separation. And what feels like to me, this just like further trying to tear us apart. Everything we're seeing on the news right now is like literally trying to tear us apart. If we can remember we're all in this together, and that all that noise, all those labels, all those things that other is just a construct of the mind, and remember we're all humans here in this together, like that's the thing that blows this open. When we can all hold it and remember it and let the rest of that shit go, that's when this shit stops. That's when we, you know, these powers that be that try to manipulate us, to have the control over us, don't anymore. And we come together in that knowingness, supporting each other, giving a shit about each other, sharing freely the information, taking care of each other's emotional needs. They don't want that. There's no money in that.
Money beyond power, right? Because what we were talking about before this episode is more about what's going on in the world, is how this continues is through our emotions. Yeah. And it's as long as the things that they are doing are meant to keep us in fear, because this is how it continues. Mm-hmm. If we don't see something on the news and react with hatred and vitriol and anger and all these fear-based emotions, then they have no power, right? Their power comes from our reactions.
So
as long as we are the puppet masters, put something out on the stage and we respond as they wish for us to respond to it, we're in the cult. We are in the manipulation. Coercion control is the term that is used, and they're coercing us into giving our power away to their desires and what their goals are. Something that I've listened to another Mark Vicente interview earlier today, and I was telling you, he's interviewing this therapist clinician, and she is specifically looking at the dark personalities. So the ones that are capable of leading the cults. And a lot of these are also in places of power. She refers to them as predator personalities. And they feed off of our energy. Mm-hmm. And that's something that was spoken to in Bewitched, is that they realized that she was basically siphoning their energy from them, their powers, their gifts, that she actually did not have. I mean, yes, she had gifts because she could identify, she could spot their weaknesses and go in there and give them what they needed. But as far as these energetic gifts, she was using them for their powers, and they've realized, this was their assessment, that she was siphoning their energy. But I also think that's happening on a collective level. If you watch the movie Monsters, Inc., that's what I think. Like, in a way, it's like the screams of the children that feeds Monsters, Inc. And our, you know, metaphorical screams are also feeding the system. And so if we want this cult to end, we no longer want to be manipulated. We have to really get a hold of our own emotions and see where we're being hijacked and where we're being emotionally controlled and manipulated. And when that happens, I think, you know, it can happen. Like quantum, like this all can change faster than our minds can imagine, can fathom.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and even to say that, like, things are changing by the second for the worse, right? With our conscious reclaiming of ourselves, our emotions, our thoughts, our energy, if there was a mass use of that, mass switch of that, then there's the quantum leap there, right? And again, just to second what you said there, like that emotional piece, bringing in our awareness to what is it, what's coming up in me now, where is this coming from, what's being activated, what am I, you know, am I reacting to this, what do I want to do with this energy, you know, like explore it, investigate it. It is yours to work with. Your emotions are information. That is part of our awakening. That's part of our healing. The emotions are the healing work, right? They're the, here's something to look at. And something you said to me before the call was like, you know, it's our fear. Our job is to transmute it. When we see it, when we feel it, and then how do we turn that into like something useful, something powerful? And I think of it, you know, when we feel anger, we can have that rage and we can have that destructive force of, I want to throw bricks at police cars and like scream up top of my voice. Is that moving things forward? Not necessarily. It's an outlet for your anger. How can you funnel that anger into it, like something that is moving things forward, that is turning that dark into something that is more positive, that is actually like making a shift, you know, like it's energy and how we're funneling it and where we're putting it makes the difference with whether we perpetuate and feed into the fear and the drama or whether we're actually helping letting that fear, that emotion, whatever, be fuel for action, positive action towards the light that makes a difference. Dropping into that question in those moments when we feel outraged or, you know, taken over by those emotions of like, where's my control here? What do I choose to do with this? How do I want to be proactive with expressing these raw and real emotions in a way that's going to really help more than just myself, but others? You know, how can we give back with this, you know, by pulling away to not feed into it and feed into something else, use it for good.
Yeah, right. Because we can't heal when we're in fear.
Yeah.
Right. We cannot. And our world changes when we do our own work. That's all that I think that we're responsible for in this moment in time is to heal ourselves because that is transforming the collective.
Yeah.
And I think I spoke to it at the beginning, but I'll just mention it again. It's been spoken to in all of the podcast episodes that I've listened to, but our vulnerabilities, and there's nothing wrong with our vulnerabilities, but what makes us susceptible to the cults is our childhood wounds. And so that's where the work is to be done. And a lot of times, when we do that work and we heal, those become our gifts and our superpowers. And that's what we can give back to the world. And so that it starts, you know, I'm not going to change what is happening across in the Middle East. Like I have me worrying about it is not going to change it. Mm-hmm. It's going to feed it actually. Mm-hmm. And so what I can do is be with what's coming up and do something about that, be with it. That's all I can do in this moment in time. And that is what's going to change, ironically, by doing the work where we can do the work. And if we haven't done the work within, that's where we start.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll just say to anyone who's feeling that the fear and the pressure, I've been there all of this week and it's felt like a very heavy energy sitting on top of my chest and my heart and hard to move out of. So I got to talk to Amanda earlier today, which was a great thing. Find someone that you can talk to who will help you have a different perspective on it to zoom out. That was really powerful. Amanda walked me through this way to see things from a very different perspective, to zoom out, which really helped me shift some of that energy. Find that somebody to talk to help you just see things differently and move out to your sense of power. Because when we get deep in that fear, we can feel powerless and small. So reach out to the one or the person or the people that you know that can just hold your hand in it, but help you see it from a new perspective so you can move back into your place of power and choice. And then do what it is that you need to do for yourself, as Amanda just said, to work with the things that are coming up so that you can do that healing work and that self-love work. And like, you know, the thing we said before this is it's the big ultimate antidote to all of this is love. To quote Ian Carroll, I don't know what his actual closing line is that I've seen, but it's got the word love in it. This is all about love. So, you know, starts with us.
Well said. Well said. And I encourage, you know, we're wrapping up here, but I would encourage those of you that feel drawn to go listen to explore these cults more that we're speaking about, the Big Witch series. If you want to understand it more, I think you might not have been in the same situation as them, but you can see where this might be playing out in maybe some relationships or broader collective of what we're speaking to. Mm-hmm. And so they're really good case studies. And so definitely go listen to those. And I think that's all I have to say for today.
Yeah. Thank you everyone for listening. Thank you, Amanda. Please leave your comments, feedback, thoughts. We welcome them all and we'll join you in the next episode.
Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode. If you haven't already, please do subscribe to your favorite podcast platform
or to our YouTube channel so that you can be notified when new episodes are released. Be sure to head to our website, theawakeningconversations.com, for the resources mentioned in this episode. Here, you can also leave your questions, comments, or feedback so we can create more episodes that you love. And if you'd like to be a guest to share your own awakening journey with our listeners, or you have a business or offering that supports others going through their awakenings, head to our website, theawakeningconversations.com, and click on Be a Guest, and we'll be in touch. Until next time, take care.